Welcome to Dithering on the Edge of Europe, the podcast about what it feels like to be European and live in the UK. I am Carola Böhm, European, German, wife, mother and academic, and living here in the UK. And with me is my favorite person, my co-host, ex-teacher, ex-energy auditor and real-life partner and husband, Richard McCarthy.
Hi.
Today is 10th of June 2019, and we've just returned from the Green Party Spring Conference in Scarborough. The Green Party did, of course, very well in the European elections, campaigning with the motto, Yes to Europe, No to Climate Change. So, of course, Dithering on the Edge of Europe had to be there and explore how we can ensure that we do not drift off or sink the ship, both politically and ecologically. So we'll hear what we experienced there. Right, we're here.
We're here in not-so-sunny Scarborough.
So, first day of the Green Party conference, which was quite inspiring.
Yeah,
terrific. Some of it.
Yes, it was inspiring. There were some strange people there, but there were some wonderful people there.
And
strange people are everywhere, so it's not just at the Green Party.
No, but as in any kind of political party, they are part of it. We are standing. Orders are being amended and policy details are being adjusted. And
I think everybody was policy wonked at the beginning, weren't they?
Yes. And it was a bit of a shame because it has to be at the beginning because that adjusts the agenda for the rest of the three-day conference. But, of course, everyone was waiting for the deputy leader speech, which was absolutely cracking. And then, of course, Caroline Lucas also gave a little speech or a little introduction, and that was very inspiring. And then it started with workshops and training and meetings.
Yeah.
So how does this relate to Dithering?
Well, I think it relates to Dithering a little bit because Brexit does feature, but actually I think we've discussed Brexit less than we've ever discussed it in a day for the last 3 months probably.
Yeah, but having said that, of course, you know, as the Euro campaign was yes to Europe, no to climate change. So it was always in the background.
Yeah, I always thought it had a big part to play in our doing so well in the Euro elections. But apparently it seems that climate change had a bigger part to play.
Oh, you missed something. When you were putting the bags into the hotel, they wanted to just do a little celebration because it's the best ever European election results. And they had, because of course it's the spa, you know, the Victorian Scarborough spa, so they can't have a lot of fireworks, but they had four little fireworks going up, and behind it, of course, the gorgeous green wave lighted, I don't know how you call that, a light chain.
Mm-hmm.
So they did a bit on music.
Green wave written out with light bulbs in all of the letters.
Yeah, it's kind of typical for Scarborough. It looks very Scarborough.
Yeah, probably.
What they also said is that in terms of local elections, the Greens' largest gain was 8 councillors in Brighton and Hove alone. But there were Green gains made in 89 areas, you know, half the country had gains in Green councillor seats. 90% of the councillors where they had a target to win strategy got elected.
Yeah, so they've been working at that for the last 4 years then, in those places.
And I also went to a policy discussion on basic income and citizens' income, which was very interesting, but yours was more interesting.
Well, maybe. I don't know exactly what happened in yours, but mine was very interesting. It was mobilising the climate emergency. And they spoke about the fact that different people were calling for zero CO2 emissions by different dates. So I think Extinction Rebellion are calling for it by 2025. The Green Party is calling for it by 2030, and Friends of the Earth apparently calling for it by 2045, which seems a long time away. And then I got Extinction Rebellion, and they were terrific because they said basically things are really coming to a head. The world that we know it has to change. It cannot stay as it is, and they pointed out that it's already changed It's changing in terms of all our paradigms are collapsing, sort of economically, environmentally, politically, the Western world is collapsing. So it's either going to change in the way that our civilization is going to just die and the planet dies with it, effectively, for human beings, and maybe humans die out, or we've just got to fantastically change our Western civilization, one thing or the other. Basically, they say you might as well be part of the change of the civilization so that there still is something left in 20 years' time.
Right. So, in that sense, if we're dithering on or off Europe, doesn't almost matter.
From that
because
point
there's something
of view.
With a much bigger priority. But I think it does matter because, as we know, the sort of green surge, the green wave, is actually larger in Europe than it is in Britain. It's quite substantial in Britain now, certainly in the last European election, but in Europe it has been even bigger.
Yeah, and as part of a big thing, you can do much more than just being a little country on your own.
Right.
So it makes sense to want to still be in Europe.
So we'll leave it as that. And we'll see what tomorrow brings.
Second day?
Yeah, second day was really exciting.
I think so.
Lots of interesting stuff. Shall we say which things that we went to?
So I went to a session which was called Libraries Are Vital for the Common Good. How do we campaign against closures, cutbacks and replacement by volunteer libraries? And so we heard, you know, but it's quite a depressing picture. We heard that across the land, you know, there's so many councils which decided to cut the libraries because it's the one thing which councils can cut without perceived negative effects. But in many, you know, smaller cities and many towns, the libraries are the only public service left. And so, of course, as we know, they're not just there for the books. They are meeting places. They're, you know, you've got cultural events going on there. Unemployed go there and get some help to fill out forms.
Certainly all of that's happening in Alsager Library.
Are going there. And, of course, various councils have, and especially the Conservatives, have used the metrics in relation to book loans as a justification to close the libraries, but not footfall, which is different. So when you see a library has a function beyond just giving books out, then, you know, it's the wrong metrics that they're using because they're just using, you know, the book loans.
Yeah, and they probably use it also to sell off books and use space for other bits.
Yeah.
And so the library gets smaller and smaller and smaller until eventually, obviously, nobody's going to go there because there aren't any books there.
There were also horrific stories that, you know, several councils said, you know, you local community, you can run the library. That's fine. We give it to you. You can run it with volunteers. However, it'll cost you rent. So it's our property.
Gosh.
And it'll be £16,000 per year, please.
What?
Mm-hmm. So that's happening.
That's so ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. The other things, of course, that's also very painful is when you replace professional staff with volunteers. So all the things that we just said, you know, where professional staff help individuals with certain things. Mm. The volunteers are not as trained as such. Sometimes it's very sensitive information. But also they did a Freedom of Information Act request and the book loans dropped from 16,000 book loans to 1,600. So it was really, you know, it dropped amazingly a lot. So having non-professional staff, you know, suddenly the turnover of our books stops. Suddenly
and
the way
then they go, oh, well, nobody's borrowing books anyway, so we'll close down the whole library.
So that there are big problems in relation to that. But the most fascinating thing that I heard is a sort of campaign strategy where you put on book raids, where you actually say, on this day, we're going to encourage everyone who has a library membership card to loan out as many books as they can. It doesn't matter if you read them. You on that day, you just get everyone around you to loan out as many as you can. It doesn't matter. You don't have to read them. You don't have to look at them. Just loan them out. But of course, the moment you do it,
you just go to one shelf and go, this one, this one, this one.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah. And that means then, you know, that gets the numbers up. Mm-hmm. Of the number of books, you know, the books are suddenly in circulation.
And I suppose, and if you want to protect the type of books that you're interested in, obviously get out the books that you're interested in. So if you're a sci-fi addict like me, take out as many sci-fi books as you can.
Yeah, I'm never going to say anything against the massive, because you do that almost, you've always done it.
Yeah, I do keep going to the library. We also have to pay lots of library fines. Because it takes me a long time to get books back.
I've probably
paid for a lot of those books.
Yes, I wouldn't be surprised if you, solely you and your son, or my son, but, in that respect, you taught him how to do that. Keep the numbers up in our local library because,
And we plan to start doing it in Stoke as well, which is Staffordshire Library, because Stoke might have different comic books. So we're thinking, we'll go and join Stoke Library. And that might give us a new batch of comic book annual type things to be able to loan out. Because when we went on holiday, if you remember last year, the library where we went on holiday just gave us one of those library tickets that allows you to take 20 books out. And we did take out 20.
So that's actually a tip for our listeners, because I know that you have always done that, and your family has always done it. That when we go on vacation, we're somewhere for a week or for 2 weeks. The first day, you say, okay, I'm just going to nip down to the library, get a library card, and get out 10, 20 books, the maximum number of books.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got books for the whole vacation.
Yeah, although when I was a kid, we got one or two, I think.
Right.
But I think in general, on library tickets, I seem to remember being able to get 3 books out on a library ticket when we first joined the library. But then a few years later, it suddenly went up to this miraculous number of 20. But that's when it became difficult to start to read all the books and get them back and all the rest of it.
Well, in my frugal way of doing things, I just thought, you're never going to read those books. And I was always critical. But hearing this talk, how good it does the library to have the, the stats that people are borrowing out loads of books, it just makes sense.
Mm.
Right, then we heard about the UK Green New Deal, From Idea to Reality. That was with a panel session. Carolyn Lucas chairing the whole session, who is also one of the founding members of the original Green New Deal group who put the policy together, and that was more than 10 years ago. But on the panel was also Andrew Pendleton from the New Economics Foundation, Anna Vickerstaff from 350, Fatima Ibrahim, who is a climate activist, and an environmental justice commissioner. And that was really inspiring, because they were exploring how now, at the time where we are, we can really start to make a difference in bringing different factions, different organizations together to really make a new Green Deal work.
Yeah, really super. I think it gives a big hope to Greens and to hopefully everybody else. And that it's an inspirational hope and something that everybody can aspire to, and the realization that we don't have to think of, to save the world, we've all got to wear hair shirts and eat lentils. And so the idea is that we can all have a very full and wonderful life.
It mirrored the talk of the co-leaders, didn't it? That this is not about us having to all cut back in order to save a few more years. Actually, what we're talking about is a change in how we do our economy. And then it's about abundance rather than frugality.
Yeah.
We can have abundant lives that, if we get the wealth distribution correctly, if we get the way we create stuff, part of that is, of course, a policy that we passed. We passed in one of the plenary sessions the Green Party's new tax and fiscal policy.
Yes, which was a big, great thing, because we hadn't been, but the Green Party had been working on it for 3 years, I think.
Yes, and of course it has also basic citizen income.
Included within it.
Yeah, fabulous.
The next thing that we went to was...
We were meeting our new Green MEPs.
Yes. Which was terrific. And we hope to welcome Gina Dowding, Northwest Green MEP, onto Dithering on the Edge later on this podcast.
So I'm Gina Dowding, newly elected Green MEP for the Northwest of England.
We've got this little podcast called Dithering on the Edge of York. And in it, we actually discuss how we are drifting off
drifting off. Well, with dithering, we're around the edge of Europe. You know, we have our logo is the UK disappearing off into the Atlantic.
Yeah.
But we're still attached by ropes. And I was saying earlier, now we've got 7 green MEPs to sort of be pulling hard on the ropes to get us back.
And of course, you're one of them.
Yes, and I'm delighted to be one of them. But just to use that same metaphor, I've started thinking, you know, is Brexit like the Titanic and we've got to kind of try to change its course? I don't know. But anyway, let's find something a bit more positive by the end.
Well, I do think if we do drift off into the Atlantic, that's where we're going to sink. So that's where we want to stay part of Europe.
Yes. We had this idea for this podcast for a bit longer, but even before Brexit happened, we realized that the UK was drifting off culturally further west ever and ever. And on the positive side, you know, if you want to see something positive about the Brexit debate, is that suddenly there are so many people clinging on to Europe than ever before.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not convinced that we're drifting. I think somebody is very deliberately trying to steer us on this path.
Pushing us.
Pushing, yeah. It's, you know, and there is an agenda, and that. And they're very cleverly hiding that agenda. But I think the more that information we get, the more transparent it's becoming.
Yeah.
Boris's latest bid for leadership is all about he's going to change the negotiating team. But we're really worrying he's going to start prepare for disaster, basically. Yeah. He's even admitting that. So surely we have to hope that more and more people are going to wake up. That isn't what they wanted. You know, they didn't want us to start planning for disaster. Surely that's what you actually avoid
that
at all costs.
It was supposed to be all happiness and roses.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, not planning for a disaster.
And, you know, I know, obviously, I'm just in elections mode and I don't want to, you know, you want to talk about other things other than really, really heavy politics. But all through the campaign, what I was saying, which I totally believe, is that there, you know, and it's a bit of a cliche, but politics is broken. People really are fed up. And I knock on doors, so I'm not making this up. I do. I'm a city councillor, a county councillor. I knocked on doors. People are absolutely desperate for some change, but they want something positive. Yeah. And I think it won't be long before people realise that this Brexit promise is just empty. There's nothing positive about it at all, but they still want the change because people's lives have been disrupted, ruined in some cases by the whole austerity agenda, you know, loss of public services.
Exactly,
people are more isolated and unhappy.
And what we've been talking about, and I think it was Paul Mason who actually went on Radio 4 and mentioned something that we always talk about, the end of democracy, the threat to democracy. And of course it's there, you know, even with our voting system, you know, we've got first past the post voting system, which are not proportional. But he actually said it's even more dire than that. It's almost like the end of the Age of Enlightenment. We don't trust our facts anymore. We don't trust our truths anymore. And if we don't get that right, and that has something to do with how do we do our democratic systems.
That's the Steve Bannon playbook, isn't it? So you just say, you can't trust them. I'm not one of them.
Yeah.
Let me.
Yeah. Which, you know, and there's a kind of irony because the Greens have always, we aren't your career politicians in the Green Party.
I'd much rather be doing something else.
Yeah. And we've had that authenticity about that claim when we say we are genuinely here for the community. But so on a very positive note, going back to door knocking, that's what we do. Where Greens stand, they make contact with communities, they live in the communities, they know what the issues are, they respond to them. And so let's be positive. In the local elections, the Greens doubled the number of councillors they had. We've just had the biggest vote in the Euros that we've ever had. And so that's about capacity. And I think it's worth saying that, you know, we've got more people joining us, but the bigger the party gets, it's so important
because the more
people we have who understand that sort of being grounded in the community makes a difference. Because actually, what your local council does really does make a difference to the quality of life. You know, your public transport and schools and arts and swimming pools and walking and cycling facilities, all those things really make a difference on a daily basis, no matter what anybody's saying at a national level. And that's where we have really done well, and we're building from that.
Absolutely.
So I think we can counter this argument about fake news, because when people look into your eyes on the doorstep, they know whether they can trust you and whether they see when, you know, 6 months later you've delivered on what you said, they know you mean business and that you're serious.
So that's actually quite positive. So from your perspective, there's more clinging on to Europe
absolutely,
than ever before.
Absolutely. No, I'm definitely. I mean, you know, it's not even 2 weeks since we had the result of the Euro elections, but I have not stopped smiling as a result of that because that is, it has really given me faith. You know, we're a tiny party compared, and in terms of our resources, compared to these big parties, and the money that the Brexit party had, and yet we've done so well.
Exactly.
So, you know, we have really good reasons to be positive. And now that we have got over doubled our number of MEPs, that gives us a mandate now to talk to more people, to spread our message about why Europe is a force for good, mm-hmm. or why it can be a force for good, and it particularly can be a force for good the more green MEPs there are in it. But, you know, we can ground that in examples. We've got actual examples of work that Molly Scott-Cato has done, our MEP for the South West, in clamping down on tax dodging, in making the lobbyists more more transparent.
That's the whole point of Europe, to make life better for everybody in Europe.
Yeah, and all, you know, and we can challenge all this negative stuff that's put out about regulation, because all that's positive. We want consumer protection.
We want people to be protected in the workplace.
Yeah, exactly.
We want,
but we can give actual practical examples of it as well, of the work that MEPs are doing, our Greens.
Fabulous. Brilliant. Shall we leave it at that?
Okay.
And if you ever want to come on to the podcast in the future again?
Oh, yes, please do. Really, that'd be terrific.
This, I'm very, very happy, and thank you.
Oh, thank you.
So if you enjoyed the show, please do leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast player, because it does help for others to find us. Goodbye for now, and have a fabulous week.
Bye.
Bye. Here's right, left. Mm-hmm. So I should be now left, and you are.
But you're on the right, and I'm on the left of the bed.
Okay, mate.
So I should. That's better. It all feels right now.
I should be on the right.
Yep, and I'm on the left.
Okay.
That's right, folks. I'm on the left in the bed. Crawler's on the right.
Right.